Stillman & Company is delivered by TriStar Moving. Fireball Hot Take Friday. Caroline Fenton is here. Ian is here. Predators fall last night 4-1 to the division-leading Carolina Hurricanes. They will play tomorrow night in Raleigh right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And again, I think it's important to win one of these two games for the standings, for the idea of making the playoffs. Moneypuck.com, the Predators as of yesterday, were a 62%, had a 62% chance of making the playoffs. It's down after last night's loss to 55.3. They were supposed to finish with 53 points yesterday. Now they are on pace to finish at 62.1. I also think they have three big games against Chicago. Chicago right now has a 6.3% chance of making the playoffs after they lost to Detroit yesterday. Chicago is going to give you their best shot in those three games. I think it would be important to get off the schneid. In fact, just looking at the numbers, Caroline, I've gone over this, but in the span of the next five games for the Predators is the eight games for Dallas, as they have to make up all the games in hand. The Preds are at Carolina, Chicago, 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 Florida. Dallas is at home to Columbus, who stinks. Detroit, who stinks. Detroit, at Detroit, at Detroit. Carolina, Carolina at home, at Tampa Bay. I will assume that Dallas will go, what, 5-3 or so in those eight games?
I'm thinking losses to Carolina and Tampa Bay.
Okay, so 5-3, 5-2-1. Something in that they're going to pick up either 10 or 11 points right in those eight games. So the Predators would need 6 points in the next five games to keep pace with Dallas. So you only need to win three of the next five, but that's three against Chicago, one Saturday against Carolina, one against Florida. That is a tall task to ask them to win 6 points in the next five games. And that would be, in my opinion, just to keep pace with Dallas and do not fall behind Dallas. So now that we know that, and now that we know that Carolina is the team most likely to face them in the first round of the playoffs, how important is Saturday night's game?
So let's say hypothetically the Predators lose Saturday night's game. To stay in good graces, you are going to have to beat the Chicago Blackhawks 3 out of 3 games, because you're not going to beat Carolina again. You're not going to beat them, you know, third out of three times, and they could possibly beat Florida. I'm not going to bank on it. I feel much better about the Predators beating three in Chicago than Florida. So that just puts you in a really difficult position to have to win three of the next five. Also, it's just really important, I think, for this team to get a win over Carolina. I think that's huge to boost confidence, and I think that's huge to be able to look into their future, into the playoffs, and say, okay, this is a playoff caliber team.
Okay, let's go around the room. What do we think the Preds' record is going to be next week in the three games against Chicago? Forget about Carolina and forget about that fifth game against Florida. What do we think the Preds' record is going to be in those three games next week against Chicago? I should go first since it is Stillman and Company, but I'm going to do that thing where the guest goes last, or the home team goes last. So, Ian, three games against Chicago. What do you think will happen? One at home, two on the road.
I'm leaning either I'll go 2-1.
Okay, Caroline?
That's what I was thinking. Trying to be realistic, 2-1. To be optimistic, let's say 3-0.
Okay, I think it's going to be 2-1, too. But I think it's also 50-50. It's 2-1. I mean, you're going to get Chicago's best shot. And two of those games are in Chicago. And Chicago probably thinks that they've outplayed you this year. They just haven't beaten you because your goaltending has been that much better. So, I mean, I think Chicago, their season, again, 6.3% chance. Their season is on the line next week, and they know it. So feeling comfortable about winning those two games, that means you have to win one game, either at Carolina or Florida at home, in order to feel comfortable that you will keep pace with Dallas by the time we get to May 1st and they face off again, and you would want those two teams to be even or the Predators to be ahead when that happens. That makes tomorrow's game really big. In my opinion, that makes tomorrow's game really big. You have to steal one game. You have to steal one either at Carolina or at Florida. I also think it's important mentally for this team, because they read the same things that we read. They see the same things that we see. And they hear the same things that we hear. They think the same things. They just maybe know a little bit more. Like, they may be able to bank on, they know when Forsberg or Tolvanen or Duchesne or Fabbro or Carrier, they know when that guy is likely to return. They know what's wrong with that guy. We don't know those things. But I think they need the confidence that they can beat Carolina. They haven't beaten Carolina this year. Right now, that's their most likely opponent in the first round. They haven't beaten them. They cannot beat Peter Mrazek. Going back to his days when he was the goalie in Detroit and they were awful, they couldn't beat Peter Mrazek. So I definitely, you know, I looked at tomorrow night's game. I think there is some real juice tomorrow night in order to get it done, because you really are 50-50 as far as the playoffs are concerned. And there's not a lot of confidence that even if you make the playoffs, you could knock off this Carolina team. I mean, even Crispy last night on the broadcast after it was over, I thought this was concerning. You know, certainly Crispy says a lot of things. Crispy works for the team, but he says a lot of things that sometimes, you know, I'm sitting at home watching and I'm like, oh. And I thought the Predators played hard against Carolina. I certainly thought Carolina beat them up a little bit, but then Crispy really highlighted it last night, and this is certainly on my mind. Here's what Crispy said last night.
And you know what, guys, I shouldn't have been surprised, but I wasn't counting on this from the Carolina Hurricanes. The physicality threw at us. Now, they're first place in the division for a reason, but I thought tonight that they took it to us, and they took us to the woodshed in the latter part of that game, and the only one unit that could do anything about it was Sisson's unit to retaliate for it, but, I mean, they were taking us into the boards heavy.
And I don't think this is an isolated incident. Dallas beat you up. That's Dallas's whole plan. I mean, they dirty you to death. The Dallas Stars do. And I think Dallas does it because they know it works. I think Rod Brind'Amour, I think that's his plan. I think he wants to rough them up. And I think he wants to leave a mark. And if I'm the Predators, you got to go into that. I mean, we know Detroit wants to take some cheap shots. I think that this is kind of the, I think the book is out on the Predators that if you bully them, if you bloody their nose a little bit, they maybe cower back some. That could be the reason why they acquired Eric Gabranson at the deadline. You know, a big physical guy that we read one of those, you know, hockey guys in Canada said that they thought it was important that he was on Ottawa's team to protect those young players. Maybe that's why. But I certainly think that there's some real juice tomorrow night, and I think they've got to put up a fight against Carolina, and they can't let them bloody their nose. And I think that they need a win for the standings, but they need a fight back game for so many different reasons. They need a fight back game tomorrow night.
If they could play the entire game like they played the first period last night, what do you think would happen?
I think that just the way that game had played out, if I had to go, I would say I'd give you a final score. If they played that way for 60 minutes last night, they would have lost 2-0. Because I think Carolina would have potted in either an empty netter or they would have scored one in the second or third period. I mean, I'm not taking anything away from Carolina. They beat the crap out of you last night. But at some point, the whole point of doing this is you play to win the game. At some point, you got to step back and you got to give it back to them. Or you got to find a way to put the puck in the net against them. Because they haven't done that this year. Even the closest they came, they lost in overtime, I believe, to start that road trip that changed their entire season. Well, you need to win. Because if you get to the playoffs against these guys and you play your cojones off and you still lose, it doesn't really make much of a difference. 615-737-1025. That's the question for the texters and the callers. How big's tomorrow night's game for the Preds? How concerned were you, as Crispy said, that Carolina physically really took them to the woodshed? How worried should we be? 615-737-1025. Plus another element that we're going to have to start monitoring with John Hines, especially if they end up in the playoffs. I'll explain what that is next. 615-737-1025. Plus, we are giving away Preds tickets for Monday night's game. We just went over how big of a game Monday night's game is going to be. We are giving away tickets later this hour, so be listening for your chance to win. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025 here on Stillman and Company. And starting Monday, listen to the game every weekday for your chance to win $1,000. It's the game's 1K payday. Listen for keywords at 9, noon, and 3. When you hear it, go to thegamenashville.com and enter the keyword for a shot at $1,000. Stillman & Company is delivered by TriStar Moving. We're live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com and ESPN 102.5, the game.
Coach, you've only lost 4 of your last 17. I know you're not going to win every game, but how has this team been able to bounce back after losses recently here?
Well, it's like everything. You know, we won 7-2 the other night, and you don't want to get too high. You don't want to get too low. It's really just like, let's take the lessons out of the game, good or bad. And we got a day tomorrow to get ready, and then we have another one on Saturday. So, you know, I think this time of year, you know, all the games are probably more emotional because of where you're at and where you're going. But the main thing is you got to maintain the focus and can't get carried away one way or the other. Let's just get ready for Saturday.
John Hines says you can't get too high, can't get too low. You got to learn the lessons. But did we learn something maybe about John Hines last night? You know, one thing that I always think about when you get into a playoff series, and a playoff series is so different in hockey than the regular season. In a typical year, the regular season, you fly to Philadelphia, play, fly to New York, play. Then you play the Islanders, then you fly home and it's Dallas, and then you host Ottawa, and then it's on the road to Anaheim, and half these teams you don't ever play again. So it's like a one-time thing. Connor McDavid comes to your building, I believe, once or twice a year, and that's it. Alexander Ovechkin comes once. Sidney Crosby comes once. You get in a playoff series, and it's like you know everything there is to know about that other team. And last night, John Hines maybe got outworked a little bit by Rod Brind'Amour. Not to say that Rod Brind'Amour is a better coach than John Hines or that John Hines isn't a good enough coach, but I thought they pointed it out, the game plan that Rod Brind'Amour had against the Predators. Chris Mason brought up how, being at home, Rod Brind'Amour was able to set the matchups last night. Here's what C. May said after the game.
I thought Rod Brind'Amour did a good job of, you know, maybe exploiting Harper and Davies out there a little bit. They got Aho and Trocheck out against them, and it creates a little bit of a mismatch, puts them in a tough situation, especially in that second period. You know, they got hemmed out there. It's tough to get that change. Carolina's got no weakness. You know, they're one of the best skating teams, I think, top to bottom. Their D moved that puck, and their forwards, it's full speed, and they just come through that neutral zone so cleanly. I just think they got beat by a better team tonight. I'll be very curious to see how they respond next game against Carolina, because they'll make some adjustments.
And he's talking about those adjustments landing on the lap of John Hines. You know, he brings up the coaching element. I think Rod Brind'Amour did a good job. Davies and Harper, again, Ian's favorite. Davies and Harper, he went right at him. Guess what? If you don't adjust to that, he's going right at him again on Saturday night. Because he's probably looking at this, hey, if these are the playoffs, that's exactly what I would do. Now the key is the adjustment. Does he put Tyler Lewington back into the lineup? Does he put David Ferentz back into the lineup? Does he break up his top pairs and maybe put Ellis back with Ekholm and Matt Benning drops down and Jeremy Davies comes up, or David Ferentz comes up and plays with Roman Josi? What's the response? And speaking of Roman Josi, Hal Gill pointed to another element of Carolina's game plan last night, and which he thought really stymied the Predators. Here's what Hal had to say on the postgame show last night.
You know what they also did? They suffocated Josi. Every time he'd go up, he'd have a defenseman on him and a forward right behind him. So he couldn't cut back. He couldn't escape. They just took away all the time and space from him. So he wasn't able to change the game the way he usually does. A great job coaching from Brind'Amour to get those line matchups and to get the looks that he was looking for. But a great job from execution from the team to do all those little things right to make it a miserable night for the Preds.
So we went through the process with John Hines of figuring out whether or not this guy could coach in general. You know, when he was hired, there was a lot of evidence that said, this guy may not be a very good coach. So we were very skeptical about John Hines. Now we know John Hines can coach. I feel very confident that John Hines can lead this group as the coach. But if you make the playoffs, and if that's the goal, and that's what we're talking about, at some point, Hines is going to have to be able to out-scheme or outmaneuver some of the best coaches in the league. He's going to have to find a way to put together a plan to knock off teams that have better players than he does. And so that may be the next step in evaluating Hines, is how does he react to Rod Brind'Amour, who I think we would all agree is a pretty good coach, turned things around in Carolina. I mean, they really sucked for a while in Carolina, and he turned it around, and that team believes in him, and he's a good coach, and he's gotten them deep into the playoffs. And I'm not saying he's the gold standard for coach in the league, but he's a good coach. How is Hines going to react to him, I think, is a big question. How much do we analyze John Hines and adjustments made from one game to the next game when they're playing these series and this weird, kind of crazy, whatever you want to call it, year? I'm asking you.
I don't know. That's the thing. I don't know.
So so tomorrow, when you watch the game, if they go right after Harper and Davies, not going to look at John Hines and say, uh-oh.
Well, what else are you going to use?
Well, just... I'm putting David Ferentz in the lineup. I'm putting the kids in. I mean, this is one thing for me.
Do you need to see Tomasino tomorrow?
Yes. Like, I'm putting the kids in tomorrow if I'm John Hines. I'm putting David Ferentz in the lineup. I'm breaking up Yossi and Ellis because I don't... This people are going to say think I'm a hater here. I don't think Ryan Ellis helps Roman Yossi. I thought he looked worse yesterday than he has looked since Ellis, you know, was on the injured list. Like, before Ryan Ellis went to the injured list the first time. I don't think Ellis helps Yossi. I don't know if Yossi has, like, some false sense of security when he's playing with Ryan Ellis. I don't know if it's that Ellis just simply isn't good. I mean, last night, Ellis got his face split, and it led to the second Carolina goal. The real separator last night. I mean, so I don't know. I would break that up. I think I'd put Ellis and Ekholm back together like they were before PK Subban showed up here. I think I'd move Matt Benning up to the first pair with Yossi, as much as I cannot stand Matt Benning. I may put David Ferentz out there with Yossi and just say, all right, Roman, you got the kid. I might do all of that. Everything is certainly on the table. But no, I'm not putting those two guys back out there together. And this is my whole point is...
There needs to be a change. We know that for sure on Saturday night.
Well, I mean, there's got to be something. I mean, this is, again, you know, we Greg Wyshynski grew up a huge New Jersey Devils fan. Now he's, you know, ESPN hockey guy, but he grew up a huge Devils fan. And he was talking back when things weren't going well. He was on the show, and he was pointing the finger at Poile and the roster makeup and talking about what's wrong with the team. And he's entitled to do that. But he said, look, I can go all day about John Hines, but this issue is not a John Hines issue. Basically saying what's wrong with the team is not the coach, but don't think that the coach is an angel either. And I think Hines has done a tremendous job this season.
Oh, absolutely.
What he's been dealt with and motivating the team and keeping an even keel and keeping the team's focus in the right place. And I felt like they did him a disservice on Monday by basically putting pressure on him to make the playoffs. But this is hockey, okay. But we never would have looked at Peter Laviolette and said that it's okay if he got into a playoff series and couldn't make adjustments or couldn't change matchups. I mean, that is part of coaching. I mean, strategy is a main element of coaching. It is a very important aspect of coaching. And so tomorrow night, if Carolina comes out and they keep firing bows at the Predators and the Predators aren't tough enough to take it, I'm going to look at the coach. If they take advantage of the matchups, I'm going to look at the coach. If the Predators don't change their lineup or try something new, I'm going to look at the coach. And I'm looking at the coach with the mentality of if this were the playoffs, something would have to change. Something would have to be different. Now, if you believe in your team, you believe in your team, fine. You don't have to change everything radically. But I think Rod Brind'Amour showed his hand last night as to this is what I'm going to do. Now the question has to be, can John Hines counter it? And if John Hines can't counter it, now we've got a problem.
And there was a texter in the text line who said that, you know, it was just one game. It's just one loss. It's not that big of a deal. But, okay, yeah, I see you. It's just one loss. But I think it is that big of a deal because I think that changes the course of the season so far. And I think that, like you said, like if we don't see any adjustments from last night, and I think it's going to be a big turning point from what we have seen from the Predators in this incredible run from the past few weeks into the future, I think last night was a turning point.
I do wonder if this team is at a standpoint now where we can't do it's just one game. Because we went over, I mean, right now, according to Money Puck, the Predators are projected to finish with 63.2 points, or excuse me, 62.1 points. Yesterday, 63.2 points. The Predators are expected to finish at 62.1. Dallas at 61.1. Cool. That is 1 point. Right now, the estimation is at 1 point. That's not at, that's not, you know, three games. That's not even one game. That is 1 point. Again, just to keep pace, the Predators are going to have to win three out of their next five against Carolina, Chicago, and Florida. They're going to have to win three of those just to keep pace with the expectation of what Dallas is going to do. So the idea that it's one game, or the idea that, you know, it's a playoff series, and if you make the playoffs and you lose both games in Carolina, so what? It's fine. To me, there's a lot of noise now. Like, there is like a prove-it factor out there. There is a something out there that we just got to see a little bit better.
And if the Predators were in a more comfortable situation, then I would say, sure, it's one game. If it was February, then I would say, sure, it's one game. That's not the case in either of those two. So, no, the one game mindset is not in the Predators' favor.
I mean, they can lose tomorrow, because if they sweep Chicago next week, it'll be fine. But
it just puts them in a difficult spot.
It puts them in a difficult spot. It possibly puts them behind Dallas's pace if Dallas wins tomorrow against Columbus. It puts them behind Dallas's pace. It puts them in a difficult spot. And mentally, I think it burns you to the idea of having to play Carolina in the playoffs. 615-737-1025. We'll get to your text on this coming up next. If you got a Preds thought, get it in. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Fireball Hot Take Friday. Boy, there is nothing like a great sports weekend and hanging out with your buddies and enjoying ice-cold Fireball Cinema Whiskey. This time last year, I was talking to you about virtual happy hours and some of the things that we had to go through, and now it feels like we're coming close to the other side, and there's no better way to enjoy it than with ice-cold Fireball Cinnamon Whiskey. Summer is right around the corner, and it is a drink that Nashville made famous. That's right, Nashville made Fireball what it is today. So go ignite the night. Please do it responsibly and be 21 years or older to enjoy. That's Fireball Cinnamon Whiskey. Stillman & Company is delivered by TriStar Moving. It's ESPN 102.5, the game.
Hi, John. Obviously, understanding that Carolina is a very good hockey team, but they limited a lot of chances on your power play as well. What kind of adjustments would you like to see your team make? And obviously, understanding, too, that there's some pieces missing on the power play, but what can this team do better to be better on the power play given the opportunity?
Well, I think when you look at it tonight, I mean, we didn't win many faceoffs on the power play, so we were starting from breakouts for the most part. A couple times we did win the faceoff, we didn't get bumps, so when it went back to the D, he was immediately under pressure, and, you know, they like to have a strong pressure kill, as do we. So, you know, it's hard to be able to make plays. So that's one. I thought our entries on the forecheck, because we had to break out so much on the power play, our entries weren't good. They did a good job standing at the line, denying entries, getting sticks on pucks. So, you know, I think there's a couple of other areas we can address too, but I think it starts with those two.
There you go. That was John Hines last night, and the power play was not good. And again, the power play was something that held the team back a couple of years ago. And it looks like they finally got it figured out. And then Ellie Tolvanen gets hurt, and now they're playing Carolina. And, I sat there and watched the game last night, Caroline, and I thought to myself, man, it feels like it's been forever since the Predators had a scoring opportunity. I mean, like a solid chance. Like, early in the game, they had opportunities. They just didn't pot them. Then for like maybe an hour or an hour and a half last night, I'm like, when's the last time the Predators have had a scoring chance? I mean, that shot count stood there at like 11 for literally like 50 minutes of real time. They had that weird feeling last night. What are the fans saying as we go to the phone line? 615-737-1025, text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. What's in the text line?
One texter says, how much better do people think Forsberg and Tolvanen make this team? At best, they average around 1.5 goals a game. They still lose against the top three if they're spotted 2 points.
So, Ian, I'm going to kick this one to you. I think the Predators are a pretty good team if Forsberg and Tolvanen are on the ice right now. And I would add Carrier and Fabbro. And I don't even like Fabbro. Let me say this. I heard the Midday Show ask David Poile about Fabbro this week. Fabbro's going to be a restricted free agent at the end of the year. I don't know if I really like Fabbro long-term. Like, I keep waiting for him to turn the corner, and he doesn't turn any corners. But I know it's young. He's, you know, he makes some nice plays. He's athletic. He's good, but he does a lot of dumb stuff, too. You know, he's still waiting.
It almost feels like he's regressing at times with Fabbro, yeah, sadly.
And things that Fabbro did wrong, you used to be able to chop him up, you know, just say, it's a rookie mistake. You know, just chalk it up to that. And now I don't feel that way anymore. But I think they're a lot better if Forsberg and Tolvanen are on the ice. Forsberg, Tolvanen, Carrier, I think they're a lot better. Do I think they go toe-to-toe with one of these teams like Tampa Bay or Carolina? I think they're still probably kind of far behind them. If they went in with this lineup into a playoff series, five games would be the best I think they could do. What do you think, Ian?
Well, there has been times throughout the streak where they've won games pretty much solely based on Saros and a couple of timely goals on the power play. And without the timely goal like that, there was a time, I think, last night's game, I don't know if they were down 2-0 or 3-0, but if they would have got a power play goal there towards the end of the second, it really could have gotten some momentum going into the third, only down 2 goals. And really, I mean, they have not even done anything on the power play. And even if at times you don't score, you at least kind of gain some momentum, you know? But they don't have any offensive zone time right now when it comes to the power play. 5-on-5, I don't know if they miss them as much. It would be nice to be able to move Arvidsson down a line, how well he's been playing, and kind of even out some of the lines.
I thought Arvidsson got a little exposed last night. You know, I mean, those big guys from Carolina, they definitely took it out on him last night.
Yeah. But in general, you know, it would be nice just kind of even up some of the scoring and have a little bit more options there. But I really, to Caroline's point earlier, I really think they're missing them big time on the power play. And right now, they're lost on the power play. They don't know who the puck is supposed to go through. They're trying to kind of feed it over to Arvidsson for that one-timer, but that's not really his game, I don't think, necessarily all the time. And what they're just pressuring, opponents are just pressing, you know, them so hard, and they can't seem to get a good movement on the puck right now on the power play. So just for that reason alone, I think it could steal a game or two.
So I think that they are really missing Tolvanen on the power play, and I think it's obvious. And it's obvious from, I don't know if he had gotten hurt at this point, but Crispy got frustrated in one of the post-game shows because he felt like they were just, you know, dilly-dallying on the half wall the whole time. Like that they were just sitting back there, just go the half wall, shoot, shot block, get back to the half wall, one-timer blocked, one-timer. I mean, I remember for years it used to frustrate us that they would just pass it around the outside. They'd have no movement.
That's kind of what they're doing
now. Nobody at the front of the net. And it'd be like, okay, here's Ellis trying to blast a one-timer. Here's Subban trying to blast a one-timer. Here's Yossi trying to blast a one-timer. And it's like, somebody move the puck. You know, somebody move it. Somebody set up on the other side. Somebody push your way in there. And they wouldn't do it. And so right now, it's like, I feel like they're so dependent on Elli Tolvanen to score when they get to the power play that when they go to the power play now without Tolvanen on the team, it's like, well, I don't know who's going to do something here. You? No, you've got to do something. There's one guy, Granlund. Granlund's the only guy who looks like he has a clue out there on the power play right now.
They need to get some more pucks to the net. When it comes to that, there's too much perimeter. They're too much trying to find the perfect play. Like when they're struggling on the power play like they are, and you've had Granlund, who's been a great net front presence, and even Johansson hanging out in that high bumper. Like you just need to start launching some pucks and hitting the net and kind of creating some chaos and an extra bounce.
Yep. There was a shift last night at 5-on-5. I think it was Pitlick, Cousins, and Holla. And they were in, it was early in the first period, and they were in Carolina's zone. And I think this was where the puck went over the shoulder of Mrazek.
There was one where Pitlick had a nice little extra pass between the legs, and I think Mrazek just got the pad out on Cousins.
I don't know if Pitlick drives me nuts or if I think he's good. Because in the last week, there's been about 4 almost maybes with Rim Pitlick. And at some point, you become the almost maybe guy. Like, you become warning track power guy. Or sometimes it's, yo, he's making things happen. And sooner rather than later, that line's going to be scoring because of Rem Pitlick. What else do we have loading up into the text line?
Another texter said, let's give Hines some credit for last night. The team did a great job containing Carolina for the most part in the first period and the rest of the game. Took an incredible pass late in the first for the Canes to score and break the floodgates open. Look, I don't think anyone is taking credit away from John Hines because of last night.
For the season or for the game? Like, I mean, he clearly got out-coached last night.
He was out-coached last night, but I don't think that takes away from what he's done this season.
No. I mean, Hines is a Hines is a fine coach. I mean, I think there's a question here now with Hines, and I'm not using last night as the example, but clearly last night, I mean, Rod Brind'Amour, I mean, he's a championship level captain who is now a coach and has gotten his team to the Eastern Conference final. I mean, Rod Brind'Amour is a good coach. If you go into the playoffs, you're going to face Jared Bednar in Colorado. You're going to face, like John Cooper's a good coach. Brind'Amour's a good coach. Joel Quenneville's won 3 cups in Florida. If you face him, he's a good coach. I mean, you're going to go up against good coaches in the playoffs. And I don't think any of us have an expectation that the Predators are going to win a playoff series if they, in fact, make the playoffs. But, I mean, eventually you're going to have to be able to hold your own against those coaches, those high-level coaches. Like, I don't think any of us worried that Laviolette would go into a playoff series and get out coached. It happened, but I don't think that we would go into these series and say, you know, I think Peter's going to... That's the way I used to always feel about Bruce Boudreau, and there's a reason he's in TV right now, and that's why. So that's like the next step in the evaluation of Hines. Can Hines develop a young team that's not very good? Yes. And that speaks to his minor league AHL background and the success he had developing players there. Can Hines have an NHL roster capable of winning and go out and out-coach other coaches? I don't know. Like, I'm not sure. That is still out there, and it will take at least a couple of years before we feel comfortable answering that question. It's just something that popped into my head after last night's game.
Yeah, more texters to the text line say that, you know, why is the win tomorrow such a big deal?
Because if you lose tomorrow, you're almost certain to be either at pace or behind pace with Dallas when you next play them on May 1st. And I know May 1st feels like it's forever away. That's 5 games for the Predators. It then puts you into must-win situations against Chicago. Not that that's the end of the world, because I don't think we think Chicago is a playoff-caliber team. But then I think also it hurts your confidence if you have to play Carolina. I mean, the one thing that I think stood out is we've played the clips from the postgame show of Chris Mason and Crispy and Hal talking about, hey, Carolina's really good. And I think for me, last night was a little bit of an eye-opener for how good that Carolina team is. And I think Crispy came on the show yesterday, and Crispy said he thinks Carolina's better than Tampa. Now, I still think Tampa with Stamkos and Kucherov, when they return, and Vasilevsky may be the best goalie in the sport, and put that in with their coaching of John Cooper and their experience, I would argue I'd rather face Carolina than Tampa Bay. But I think Crispy makes a valid point. I mean, after watching Carolina last night and watching Tampa Bay Saturday night, I think that Carolina was better last night than Tampa Bay was Saturday night. So I think there needs to be some confidence that you can beat this team, because you haven't even beaten them this year. You haven't even really come close.
And Shane from Ashland City says a sweep over Chicago can't happen. I'm not going to say it can't happen. I'm going to say that it's going to be incredibly difficult, but I don't think it can't happen.
25% chance. You know, I mean, I think it's a 25% chance that they sweep Chicago. I am infinitely more worried that Chicago sweeps them, or that they lose 2 out of 3. That the Predators win on Tuesday night. The fact that they got themselves in, you know, into the playoff picture, David Poile showed them confidence. They win Tuesday night. Everybody gets excited. They lose to Carolina. They write it off and say, well, Carolina's really good and we're hurt. Then they get Chicago's best shot and they get swept by Chicago. I think it's more likely that they get swept by Chicago than it is that they sweep Chicago. And that's what has me scared. And
you think it's more likely that Chicago will sweep the Predators
than it is that the Predators will sweep Chicago?
Wow.
Well, I think there's a lot of factors. Number one, I think that most things balance out over time. You've beaten Chicago because of your goaltending. The last time you played them, they had 40-something shots. You had 20, and you won like 1-0 or 2-0 or something like that. Saros was fantastic. You won a game there on a Sunday night a month ago. Rene absolutely took it. So those things balance out. Early in the year, you played them, beat them in overtime both times. Those things balance out. I think the other thing is, 2 of those games are in Chicago. The third thing is, Chicago's playing for their season next week. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Calls and text. There is an NFL story that is not getting as much traction as it should get, because there is some public shaming of one of the dumber teams in the league And we've got to touch on that and hit the highlights coming up next. 615-737-1025 is our phone number if you want to get in. Speaking of that phone number, be listening carefully because I think we may be giving away some Preds tickets. I don't know. But let me give something else away too right now. ESPN 102.5 The Game and T-Mobile have teamed up to give away a hockey home gating party. Text the word PUCK to 615-737-1025 now to enter for a chance to win a Dos Equis prize pack, which includes a case of beer, dessert from Nothing Bundt Cakes, a T-Mobile prize pack, and food provided by 312 Pizza Company in Germantown. You must be 21 or older to enter. Get excited for that. Stillman & Company, we're delivered by TriStar Moving. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game. Caroline Fenton, how do you feel on a Fireball Hot Take Friday, I should say? How do you feel about how maybe I'm a little bit more, you come from ESPN, mm-hmm. where, you know, I would say they're overly tough sometimes. You know, they'll have criticism, but they won't be rude about the criticism. Most things at ESPN. Maybe sometimes my criticism comes off as a little blunt or a little harsh.
Could say that.
How do you feel about that?
Do your thing. If you can back it up and you can stand strong, then I say do your thing.
Okay, so I think there are some dumb teams in the NFL. I never see somebody get on television and say, well, Bob, the reason that the New York Giants did that is because they are dumb. But they are dumb. I saw that the Giants are thinking of bringing in Jason McCourty. Oh, great. A 30-plus-year-old corner who can't run anymore and never really could. Great. Good for you. Dumb. There's a handful of dumb teams. I think the Jacksonville Jaguars are dumb. I think the Jets are dumb. I think the Raiders are dumb. I think Washington is dumb. I think, you know, like Carolina's not a good team right now, but they're not dumb. Cleveland, dumb. So I just think there's a significant amount of the teams in the league that are dumb, whether it's ownership, general manager, you name it, they've got issues. So I saw this. Cecil Lammy. Ian, does he break our bank for believing as a source? He's got a blue check mark, 48.
I have actually heard of him.
Okay, 48,300 followers on Twitter, blue check mark.
He's heavy into fantasy football. Okay. I've followed him and his their little company and some of his friends that work there, yeah.
Okay, so do we believe him as a source? His bio says...
He's a Denver guy.
Digital talent for DenverFan.com, Broncos, NFL Draft, Fantasy Football, Senior Writer for FootballGuys.com. Mm-hmm. Do we trust him, his reporting?
Kinda.
Okay, good enough for the show. He said, league sources tell me Jets turned down 49ers first-round pick for Sam Darnold earlier this offseason. Joe Douglas and company had concerns about Zach Wilson's shoulder and wanted to see his pro day, now super confident and will likely be the number two pick. So the Jets were offered the 12th overall pick for Sam Darnold, who they later traded for, what, a sixth, a second, and a fourth? They were offered the 12th overall pick, and they turned it down.
Oh, no.
Because they wanted the medical on Zach Wilson.
That's just such a Jets thing to do.
Because they're dumb. Dumb teams do dumb things. I'm not saying that Darnold isn't worth the 12th overall pick. I want to see Darnold play in Carolina. I think he deserves a second chance. Anybody after what Ryan Tannehill did the day that he left Adam Gase, anybody who's been under Adam Gase deserves a second chance. But they turned down the 12th overall pick when they were going to trade him anyways. They just wanted to see the pro day to decide on the shoulder. Are you kidding me? Really? Really? Dumb. Caroline's headlines.
Spanning the sports world. It's Headlines with Caroline on Stillman and Company, right here on Nashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
I also think it's so funny that you brought up Jason McCourty because Ian texted me last break and said, bring this up because Jared hates Jason McCourty.
He sucks. I mean, I'm trying to not say the word sucks so much anymore. I'm really trying.
You're turning a new leaf.
I'm trying. But Jason McCourty was so overrated and overpaid when he was a member of the Titans, and that was 5 years ago. Like, the dude should have always been a safety. Not just now, if the Giants move him to safety, where they already have Logan Ryan there. But, like, I wonder, is Logan Ryan general managing this team? Because now they have him, Adoree Jackson, and they're going after Jason McCourty? Ugh, Jason McCourty, great guy. Let me say that. But, oh my goodness, I cannot tell you. McCourty was such an overrated Titan. And I was so glad the day he was gone. And I'm glad to see him continue to be gone. And I hear that the Giants, to me, McCourty is a league veteran minimum guy at this point in his career. And maybe that's what the Giants are offering. I don't know. But he's from there. He went to Rutgers. You know what? If you want to go out, I wish him the best. But, oh my God. You talk about a guy who's got no wheels at a speed position. He's your guy.
If I've learned one thing about you, it's that anyone who used to play for the Titans and didn't really do anything for them is who you feel most strongly against.
Well, the guys they paid money to. The guys that fans thought were good. That's it. Like, Brian Arakpo got paid money, and he had a nice little run here. He wasn't particularly great, and then he retired. He was okay. They traded for DeMarco Murray. He led the AFC in rushing. Love DeMarco Murray. It's the guys who are supposed to be good who the fans are like, oh, yeah, Jason McCourty, he wasn't bad. No, he was nothing when he was here. He was just whatever. Clownies, just whatever. It's just whatever.
Which brings me to my next point.
Oh, no.
The Browns released defensive tackle Sheldon Richardson. Said it was because of salary cap reasons, but I'm assuming because they brought in another certain pass rusher named Jadeveon Clowney, and I just want to break down some of their stats. This past year, Sheldon Richardson had 64 tackles. Do you know when Jadeveon Clowney ever had 64 tackles?
Never.
Never. He's never even breached 60.
Now, he's also not a defensive tackle, so that's a little...
Yes, true. But in 2017, he had 59.
His only good year that gets brought up every single time anybody talks.
In 2017. Correct. So, sounding like Jadeveon Clowney will be that guy in Cleveland on the defense.
So, I mean, I've always liked the defensive line talent that Cleveland's had, whether it was Sheldon Richardson or Malik Jackson or I think who they have, Ojinobi a couple years ago. I mean, like, they had some decent players. Sheldon Richardson, to me, has always been a good player who, had he been drafted by a team not named the Jets, had he been drafted to an adult, mature team, I think would have had a great NFL career. Instead, I think he had success with the Jets, and he got a little caught up in the fact that, the Jets players, they're not really the most focused football players in the world. And I think he had some off-the-field issues, and then, of course, ends up in Cleveland where they'll take off-the-field issues. And I know there are red flags surrounding Sheldon Richardson. I'll say this, though. For the better part of a decade, he's been a pretty solid and talented, good defensive lineman.
Moving on.
Which Clowney has not been. Go ahead.
I knew you were going to have to bring that in there somehow. Todd McShay and Mel Kiper were answering some of the biggest questions surrounding the NFL draft. Yep. And one question that was asked was, the big thing today is versatility, but which prospects seem extremely scheme-restricted? It's interesting because Azeez Ojulari was labeled a perfect 3-4 outside linebacker. There's been a lot of talk about the Titans possibly trading down and out of the first round. If Azeez Ojulari is on the board at 22... would they take him? And if not, are they trading down?
So I think the trading down is more complicated, and I'm glad you said that because I'm about to get to that right.
Wonderful. We didn't even plan it.
But I don't think Ojulari will be there at 22.
You don't think so?
No. The more I hear about Ojulari, the lack of a sacker, the fact that everybody always needs a sacker, everybody's always going to take a sacker, I think somebody's going to, the physical traits on Ojulari and the potential, I think it's going to sell somebody, and I think people are going to circle the Titans at 22. And I think they're going to say, if we want Ojulari or we want Jalen Phillips, we have to get ahead of Tennessee and Indianapolis at 21 and 22. And I think that's going to be, I think everybody's going to peg the Titans. I think there's an expectation the Titans could take a wide receiver or a corner in the first round. I think most people in the league think the Titans are going to go for a pass rusher. And if you want the pass rusher, you better get ahead of the Titans.
And it's interesting, too, because Mel Kiper says that Kwity Paye is the best pass rusher in this draft.
Everybody I've talked to doesn't feel that way.
Which is
TD does not feel that way. A coach who would know does not feel that way about Kwity Paye. I mean, when I say a coach who would know, I'm telling you a coach who would know that if I told you who the coach was that told me that said they think Kwity Paye is overrated, every single one of you would be like, oh, yeah, don't draft him. If I told you who the coach was, you would say, do not draft him. Those are Caroline's headlines. Speaking of the draft, coming up next, what about trading down? Because I do think the Titans probably go into this draft with an idea of who they want. And I feel pretty confident that somebody's going to be there. But is the value going to be there for the Titans to move out of that pick? What history tells us you get if you trade out of this slot? we'll discuss next. Stillman & Company, we're delivered by TriStar Moving. It's a Fireball Hot Take Friday. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game.